Box to Box Stoppage Time.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Hello and welcome to Box to Box Stoppage Time. You're with Rob Gilbert, Derek Dyson and Willem van Denteren for our podcast where we go through it. Highlights caught our eye over the past week, our moments, our hot topics, our teams of the week. It's always good to take a week off, as I did last week. Derek, I think you asked about how my golf went. The fact that I didn't post that golf card suggests that it was just average. And I enjoyed your efforts, gentlemen, last week. Willem, it's always a tricky thing to pick your best, isn't it?
It can be. Although there's another interesting trend that is starting to beset the back room of Stoppage Time, and that is people selecting games, teams, or hot topics, particularly games, before they've even been played, Rob.
Okay. Well, I don't know that I'm guilty of that.
No, not yourself. No, not you. The old firm is a banker. It's always interesting, but
I can see a guilty.
They do come through earlier and earlier in the week, and sometimes even before the matches have been played, Derek.
Well, quite. I mean, it's one of the marquee games in world football. I've never, ever known a 0-0 old firm. Certainly, they're always feisty encounters. So for me, it was an absolute banker. I knew I was going to be talking about this game, so I wanted to get my bid in early. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Yes, please. Fair enough.
This was a cracking game. Lived up to the billing of the showdown between the top two in Scotland. Only Rangers fans inside Ibrox. Apparently away fans will be allowed to return from next season, which does detract from the spectacle a bit, but the drama on the pitch was certainly worthwhile. It ended 3-3. Celtic scored with the first attack of the game. I mean, it can't get any more dramatic than that. A long ball from Joe Hart, reached Maida, and I still haven't quite worked out how it hit him and went in the goal, but the ball ended up racing past Jack Butland. They're 1-0 up. They made it 2-0 through a penalty. Rangers got a penalty back, and their talismanic, totemic captain, all-round goal-scoring defender machine, James Tavernier, scored again. Rangers were denied an equaliser with VAR, but eventually got a goal via Simmer at the 86th minute to put them level. So Celtic then went right back down the other end of the pitch and scored via Ida, only for Matondo to score an absolute beauty 3 minutes into stoppage time from the corner of the penalty area, opened up his body and curled it into the far corner. Joe Hart had absolutely no chance and ended a pulsating encounter. It's hard to call who was the best point for. Celtic were going for clear at one stage away from home. Rangers squandered the home advantage, but kept Celtic within range. And of course, they're 1 point behind. They've got that game against Dundee that was called off for a waterlogged pitch a few weeks ago. The final old firm of the season, though, is at Celtic. So Celtic would say, well, if we win that, we win the league. So it's in both of their hands. It's in both of their hands at the moment. And with title races all over the place around the world football at the moment, none more so in Scotland, and that was another classic old firm for the annals, guys.
Yeah, it was, and every time I hear old firm these days, I just, muse about the opportunity lost to play that old firm match in Sydney. And look, not that the old firm derby needs to be, lifted beyond the pedestal that it already sits on, but to get that international exposure, and for people who are from the Scottish diaspora who live in other parts of the world to see an old firm derby outside of Scotland would have been fascinating, but it wasn't to be. All right, well, I'm going to jump in next with my game of the week. Now, we've had a full round since, and United have redeemed themselves at home against Liverpool in the meantime, but my game of the week, the 4-3 Chelsea win against the Red Devils at Stamford Bridge. Have a listen to this.
Taken quickly. Palmer driving it. It's in! It's in for 4-3! It's absolutely unbelievable! Cole Palmer's won the game in the 101st minute! Have you ever seen anything like this? Chelsea 4, Manchester United 3. It's one of the most extraordinary ends to a game you can imagine.
If you're wondering whether there was any additional emotion in that call, yes, that was the Chelsea broadcast. It was incredible. So Cole Palmer's stoppage time hat-trick, I was watching on my phone at home. So I'm sitting in front of the computer early in the morning, just tapping away at some emails and glancing at what's happening. It was the latest winner scored in Premier League history, 100 minutes and 39 seconds. Now, consider this. After they came back from 2-0 down, United were ahead with 99 minutes and 17 seconds on the clock. And the two late strikes from Conor Gallagher just had to be seen to believe. Now, I spoke to a mate of mine who's a United diehard. He's an expat. Paul O'Neill's his name. Paul, if you're listening, hello. Now, I spoke to probably an hour after the game. Now, this is the story. He was listening on the radio at the gym and got home 7 minutes into stoppage time, and they were 3-2 up at that stage. By the time he got out of the car and turned the TV coverage on to watch it, they were 4-2 down. You don't see many like this, Derek.
No, it was an extraordinary game of football and some amazing schadenfreude as well, as that Chelsea call was overjoyed. Some of the Man United fan live reaction, the live stream, were absolutely superb as well. I mean, it was a bit of a clown car performance from both sides, really. They're not good teams, these two. I mean, Manchester United have got a -1 goal difference and they're in, they're in fifth or sixth place or whatever it is in the league at the moment. And, you know, just defensively, they're absolutely all over the shop. Yes, Man United have had an absolute tranche of injuries that were down to their absolute bare bones against Liverpool at the weekend. But both teams just lack that word that Pep, Jurgen and Mikel all talk about: control of the game, control of the ball. They don't have that. It's just end-to-end. And it's great, great entertainment for us, great as a product for the Premier League. But I think even for either team, it's just, as much as there was elation for Chelsea, like, hugely worrying. And then Chelsea go away and have no control at the weekend and draw, was it 2-2 with Sheffield United? That's yes. That's the problem. That is the issue right there. So fair play to Chelsea. Cole Palmer, a rare bright light in a dire season for them. He is a super player. I like the look of him. I think he's got a role to play for England at the Euros. But apart from that, yeah, Poch in the rain, punching his fist. But I don't know if either team came out of it with any credit.
No, but as a non-partisan fan, it was bloody entertaining. Willem, your game of the week?
Yeah, just quickly, Cole Palmer, 26 games, 16 goals, 9 assists, single-handed throughout much of the season, Derek, and more than just those raw numbers, really is the, you know, not the sole, but yeah, I'll go with it, the sole creative force in that team, and still only 21. And yeah, turned his back on Man City for game time, and that's proven a pretty good decision. All right, you guys picked out some storied rivalries: Celtic, Rangers, Man U, Chelsea. I'm going to go with the equally famous Western United against MacArthur. 3,430 in the house at the mightily named Ironbark Fields in Tyneet. And the locals wouldn't have been too happy, as Jonathan Jaman and Ulysses Davila had the visitors 2-0 up inside 25 minutes. John Aloisi's team, Western United, have looked pretty nailed on for the wooden spoon for much of the season. As you put it with Napoli a couple of weeks ago, Rob, so beautifully, from the penthouse to the shithouse within a couple of seasons. And they've been pretty unapologetic in saying that their priority this season, this is Western United, has been getting into Tarnate rather than their results on the field. And you can get away with that in a non-relegation league. But I must say, I think that's pretty poor. But from 2-0 down here, they went nuts. They were kicking to the scoring end, and it looked like there was a fair breeze at Tarnate. Yeah, with no trees around the ground, as we've spoken about. But they pulled one back through Riku Danzaki, then another through Michael Roos, and then another, and then another.
Long shot. Garuccio! Off the underside of the crossbar. Still on the attack. Donicky! Crossbar again! Roos! Roos! Western United are irresistible! Tarnit was worth the wait, people. Michael Roos has a double, and Western United...
Teo Pelizzeri, one of the great commentary efforts there. None more enthusiastic. Yeah, they just went berserk, Rob. Four goals in less than 20 minutes, as Teo said. They're off the bottom of the ladder for the time being. A couple of games to go in Tarnit. They've got a women's final this weekend. That was a hell of a game.
Yeah, it was. And interesting that you chose that after. I think you and Edge were pretty harsh on the Ironbark facility last week. And
Edge was harsh.
Yeah. I thought you joined in.
Yeah, no, we'll go back and have a listen again.
Okay. All right. Well, let's say Edge was more.
It's good they're there. It's good they're there. Edge said it's not ready. I said it's been way too long. Just got to start.
Yeah. Well, look, hey, Ben, it's results like that that puts these sorts of venues on the map, isn't it? You know, memories created. I'm sure Derek would agree, the passionate green and black man that he is. He's chatting away there with his mute button.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that Simpsons episode with the monorail and the salesman selling the monorail, and he goes, "By golly, put them on the map." it's a bit like that. It certainly has put Tarnit on the map.
Yeah, well, Danny Townsend is on online on occasion referenced and sort of linked to Lyle Landley, the monorail salesman from the Simpsons, Derek. Sold the dream, and then he's off to Saudi. Where is he, Rob? Not answering our questions.
No, he's not. Well, I think maybe selling a monorail in Saudi Arabia. That's possible. Anything is possible. Okay, look, I'm going to leap in here off the back of your A-League effort, Willem, my team of the week. Okay, we had our good mate Jason Pine on to talk about the Wellington Phoenix, but it was their conqueror from the weekend who overtook them at the top of the A-League ladder with a dramatic late winner, which, Willem, you had queued up from the main show.
Docker, still going, Docker, oh, he's done it, the Brazilian, well, it was going to be his night, denied by the woodwork in the first half, and in the first minute of stoppage time, his perseverance, his persistence was not to be denied.
So good we had to hear it twice for our listeners of earlier in the week, and for those who didn't, Michael Docker was the hero, the stoppage time winner, put the host back in front and sent the home crowd into the proverbial dreamland, just weeks away from what they hope will be lifting the Premier's plate. Apart from the winner, Docker was also the provider, splitting the visitors' defence with a pass that set up Stormaru for the assist for the opening goal to Angel Torres. And while there will be a few twists and turns, nothing's guaranteed over the next few weeks. You've got to look at this club and reflect on the turnaround. They won three straight wooden spoons. You know, there were calls for them to be dumped out of the competition and replaced by bigger names. So they're the only sporting franchise on that Central Coast strip of the Central Coast of New South Wales. And to his credit, it was Alan Sajic that got them back on track. Nick Montgomery continued the rebuild. They finished third last season and won the now infamous grand final. And in his first season, our new mate Mark Jacko Jackson has got them purring just at the right time. Now, Willem, you're a Melbourne lad. You love the A-League as the domestic competition. Tell me, what's your perception of the Central Coast Mariners as a club and their turnaround from afar?
I think we speak about them more than any other domestic club on this program, Rob, particularly over the past couple of seasons. And yeah, you've outlined the turnaround beautifully. When I first started on the show, it wasn't infrequent to have Ray Gatt on and discuss whether or not they were going to survive. And that was not just a fleeting discussion. That was, you know, regular. They were just a complete basket case, constantly on the bottom of the table. And it really did seem like there was no way out. And yeah, you credit the trio of managers who have seen them rise to this position. Stajic, who was, you know, on the nose in Australian football, to say the very least, when he took on that job. Nick Montgomery, who's gone on to bigger and better things at Hibs and has his really, you know, managerial future ahead of him, having also been a fantastic player through their first iteration of glory days, if you like. And now Jackson, who came in as a bit of an unknown to Australian audiences. And yeah, you hear him speak. We had him on here. You hear him speak to Daniel Garb post-game. He's dog hungry to win. And they're contesting in, you know, multiple competitions or in the AFC Cup as well, which some might see as a secondary competition. But for them, it's an opportunity to continue to win silverware, to build the history of the club. So, no, they've absolutely got it right at the moment. The academy is brilliant. That just continues to turn out players, similar to what goes on with Wellington as well. And then you look at a club like Melbourne Victory, who at the start of the A-League was a premier club packing out the Dockland Stadium, 50,000, winning grand finals and seemingly untouchable, and now hasn't been able to secure deals with the local government to build a proper academy. They missed the Footscray deal a few years ago. So, and you know, as a result, when was the last time a young kid came through Melbourne Victory and went overseas and played for the Socceroos, like we see as a matter of course with the Mariners? So, yeah, it has been a hell of a turnaround, and they deserve to be at the top of the tree, and yeah, they're going to continue to add trophies through this little run.
Yeah, no, brilliantly said, Willem, and helpful with getting the gaffer on with us, and you know that can't be said of all of the clubs, and you know, it's been a while, but you know, Victory, who you referenced there, it's pretty hard to get Tony Popovich on at the best of times to talk to, you know, humble podcasts like our own, but you know, I like to see the clubs that that are supportive of the entire community and speak even when they don't want to speak, doing well.
No, that's exactly right. I couldn't agree with that anymore, that final point.
No, exactly. Well, why don't you pick it up from here, Matt, your team?
My team of the week comes from Japan. It is the league leaders, Mashita Zelvia. Another week, another win. It's their first season in the top flight, and it is, so far, 5 wins, 1 draw, and 1 loss after 7 played. This week, they defeated the famous Kawasaki Frontale, Kawasaki powerhouse of the past 5 years. They have dropped away a little bit, but nevertheless, from Mashita, it was a great effort to see out the final 20 minutes with a 10 or with a, you know, a man disadvantage with 10 men for a 1-0 win. This club started life as a school in 1977. It was developing a lot of players, but couldn't retain them, so they had to actually form a team. And that then rose through the ranks in Tokyo, through the Prefectural League, the Kanto League, the Japan Football League, and then finally the National J3. From 2014 to 2015. They then had 7 years in the J2 where they won promotion last year. Mitch Duke led the line for much of that. He scored 10 goals in 34. He's still there. He's come off the bench in 6 of the 7 games this year. Doesn't get any easier. This week they've got the defending champions, Vissel Kobe. But for a team to come in and make their debut in the top flight and lead 7 weeks is a fair effort, Rob.
No, that's a bloody brilliant story. We followed their rise up the J2 ladder and an eventual promotion, but to hit the ground running that the way they have is a brilliant performance, and it's great to see that there's a Aussie involvement in that side as well. I mean, so many Australian stories running through the coaching ranks of the J-League. Not that the cultural cringe of Australian sport is still a topical thing, but we do like to see our own do well in international competitions, and when it's one that's so highly respected in the local community or the local Asian sort of area, as the Japanese is, even more the better. Derek, what do you got for us?
Yeah, well, it's a team for me that we haven't spoken about for a little while, and that's Wrexham. And I thought it was time to check in on League Two. So last time we spoke about Wrexham on this show, they just won promotion to the Football League. We haven't really, as I said, haven't really spoken about them since. But, you know, most recently they won 2-1 away at Colchester. Goals from their star man, Mullen, and Max Cleworth, with an 85-minute winner, means that they're sitting in second in League Two behind Stockport County, which is another great Phoenix story in itself, by the way. But they're behind them by 4 points, but they're 2 points clear of MK Dons, and they've got a game in hand on MK Dons. And then Mansfield, they're 3 points ahead of them, but they have a game in hand on Wrexham. So it's all very, very tight in this league. The top three in League Two will go up, so Wrexham very much in line for that. Mullen scored his 100th goal in that game for Wrexham. You know, he was an elite signing in the non-league, and he's continuing to add the goals there. They have signed a couple of ex-Premier League players as well. James McLean, who played for Wigan, Sunderland, and as a Republic of Ireland international, amongst other things, and Stephen Fletcher, the former Scotland international, he's been in the goals this season as well. They did have a slow start to the season, winning just one of their opening 5 games, but their results did pick up from there. They got into the promotion spots by October, and they haven't dropped out ever since. They also reached the fourth round of the FA Cup, equaling their feats from last season. They went out to Blackburn in the end. That's no bad thing. So the dream lives on for Wrexham. I'm sure they've got plenty more for their documentary. I'm sure there must be another documentary in the pipeline for this season. And just a quick word on Notts County, who famously came up with Wrexham. They're not having a bad season, but they're sitting in 15th. They won't go down. But they were very close last season, but it's Wrexham who have pulled away in League Two and, you know, taking that momentum and, yes, that extra funding. And they do look good for League One next season. So, little update on Wrexham there, chaps.
Nice one. If you're not a subscriber to Disney, then just listen to Box and Box and you'll find out what's going on at Wrexham. All right, Willem, hot topic of the week?
Yeah, my hot topic, and I'm going to lean on Derek a little bit here, is the passing of Joe Kinnear at 77, somebody who I didn't know a hell of a lot about, but always nice to be able to trawl back through and read the obits and find more about them. As a player with Tottenham, he won the FA Cup, the League Cup and the UEFA Cup during 280-odd matches. That career was cut short due to a knee injury, but he did also play 26 times for the Republic of Ireland. Fair to say, Derek, he'll be most strongly remembered for his time on the touchline. Post-career playing days, he did go to India for 7 years, and he coached the national team and also had a stint with Nepal through the 80s, but went on to his greatest success with Wimbledon, who he led to three top 10 finishes in the early days of the Premier League, in charge of a group known as the Crazy Gang. Derek, can you tell us any more here?
Yeah, sad to hear about Joe Kinnear. It's dementia that got him. He had the condition from about 2015, I think, but lost his battle with that in recent days. Joe Kinnear, they're not going to make managers like Joe Kinnear anymore. He's definitely of a particular type and an era. And yes, his Crazy Gang exploits. This was the team, Wimbledon, the original Wimbledon team, that was playing at Selhurst Park. They didn't have a home ground, so they play their home games there. This was the team of Vinnie Jones, Robbie Earle, Effen Akoku, Jason Yule, Neil Sullivan, Chris Perry, and they were known for, and John Fashanu, of course, and they were known for their kind of a crazy sort of on field, very aggressive, led by, you know, Vinnie Jones kind of embodying that. But then their craziness off the pitch as well. They were completely nuts. I mean, John Hartson talks about signing for them, first training session, went to the shower, came back, and all of his clothes were in a bin on fire outside. And that was his initiation into the Crazy Gang. So, look, he did a great job at Wimbledon for a few years, you know, really punching above their weight there. He did go on to manage, rather curiously, Newcastle at one point. Wasn't a popular appointment, and by then he was in the end of his career. But I think those with memories of the early part of the Premier League will remember the Crazy Gang and will remember Joe well. So, yeah, it's a loss to the game.
And to close, Rob, Jonathan Wilson in his obituary in The Guardian wrote, his direct style and laid-back approach, often dashing off to watch the racing on television, proved the ideal fit for the club at the time.
Yeah, no, they're great stories. Transitioning from one era to another with some of the observers of the old era still alive and in good enough shape to sort of comment and remember. And fortunately, we've got the benefit of YouTube that you can, if you're not familiar with these stories that I know I sort of grew up with in the formative days of my football interests, that you can go back and get little snapshots and catch up for yourself. Derek, your hot topic.
Yeah, I'm staying in England and I'm going up to the Championship this time. I felt it was, I couldn't cram these into any of my teams or game of the week, so I decided just to make it a hot topic. The Championship title race, I mean, it was exciting before. It's absolute fever pitch. Now you think the Premier League is good, or Scotland. This is a classic as well. So Leicester bucked a poor run of results to beat lowly Birmingham City 2-1. It was Dewsbury Hall with the opener. A player they did very well to keep, actually, because he's a real talent. And Mavidi getting the winner for them. Norwich kept up their amazing record against Ipswich. Now, so despite Ipswich being sort of on paper the force in East Anglia at the moment in terms of league position. It was a free kick, a kind of Roberto Carlos style free kick from Nunez that gave the Canaries the 1-0 victory, and they're still very much in the mix for the playoffs. Coventry denied Leeds. Leeds had a chance to go back to the top of the league, but they lost to Coventry 2-1. It was Sims and Rice who got the goals there. This was Leeds' first loss of 2024. Coventry, of course, battling it out with Norwich for those promotion places. But what this means is that Leicester are now back top of the league. Ipswich and Leeds have lost ground. I mean, all three of those teams are, they're the three that can get the automatic promotion. You feel like that they're going to ding-dong it all the way to the end of the season. And just a little word on Birmingham City. They've now slipped into the relegation places after that loss to Leicester. Of course, they were managed by Wayne Rooney earlier in the season in that ill-fated stint. And we know that Edge has a soft spot for the Blue Noses, but it's not looking good for them. They are falling down the table and are badly out of form in games now. So tight at the top, tight at the bottom. All eyes on the championship. It's going to be a great run in.
You mentioned Coventry, Derek. I want to give a shout out to my good mate Chris Adams, who came to Australia many years ago. He's had a bit of a cancer battle and is coming through that strongly. The big fella, he is a huge Coventry man, and he's going back to the UK next week to watch the Sky Blues take on the might of Manchester United in the semi-final of the FA Cup, and he signs off a little message on our WhatsApp group, Sky Blue Army. Go, Chris. I hope they win it for you, brother, and get to the final as well as get promoted too. My hot topic, and, you know, I sort of wade into these choppy waters with some hesitation, but this story is a football story. Some may accuse me of conflating a couple of different stories into one, but they're off the pitch stories. And for me, as an observer, they are connected. So this one's a sign of the times. It's got so many layers. So to give you a snapshot, the 20-year-old PSG player Corbin Albert was booed by sections of the home crowd as she was introduced in the second half of the US national women's team She Believes Cup semi-final against Japan. Now, this was after Albert publicly apologised for reposting a now-deleted video of a Christian worship space preaching against homosexuality and feeling transgender, inverted commas. In another TikTok post, which has since been deleted as well, Albert showed her family saying their pronouns are USA during the 4th of July weekend. She got plenty of criticism from both her current and former teammates, including Lindsay Horan and Alex Morgan, as well as her former teammate Megan Rapinoe, who, in a bit of irony, whose number she wears, the number 15. Now, here's an observation from CBS journalist who covers the US national women's competition, Sandra Herrera.
I think there's something smart about getting in front of it a little bit, again, because I think something that folks are going to watch in the She Believes Cup is no longer just the fact that they're going to go up against a couple different teams. There's going to be Olympic evaluation. How are certain players going to look? Is their stock going to go up, go down? But now there's this added layer of a team culture temperature check, essentially. So I think it was important that they try to address it head on, but I think there's always like going to be certain pockets of the public that want to see a bit more.
Welcome, Emma Hayes. A bit of a job for her to deal with there. This comes around the same time as players in a New South Wales competition have announced they refuse to play against transgender players. Personally, I have a friend who's child transition from female to male was going through all sorts of challenges as a female, but as a male is, you know, blossoming now. I can only personally observe what I see. That's an example, but it comes at the same time as controversy emerged around a women's football team, including five transgender players from the Flying Bats FC, who won every game they played over a four-week pre-season competition, winning the grand final 4-0, including one trans player scoring six goals in a 10-0 victory. So, you know, I'm not commenting on the rights and wrongs of any of this. I'm just putting two stories out there that are in the public space that are being discussed in the broader football community. And I guess just wondering, you know, where it's all going to lead us. You know, I know, Derek, you're a person with strong views on social conscience matters, as you are, of course, Willem, as well. These are pretty tricky matters to negotiate.
Yeah, they most certainly are, Robin. You mentioned the Flying Bats there. That's at the local level. It's difficult enough for organisations such as the IOC in terms of Olympic competition, or FIFA in terms of, you know, big, broad, professional organisations, in terms of how they rule and stipulate on these matters in a world that is always changing. So for local competitions to take on such matters is even tougher. So it all plays out, and people do get upset as it goes along, and that's very unfortunate. But yeah, it's a particularly vexed issue, and yeah, the world is taking its time to sort itself out, I think.
It is. We'll continue to watch this space as that world turns. Okay, Derek, thanks again, mate, for another good week.
Yes, thanks, and goodbye. When you're recording the next show, I should be on a beach somewhere, maybe, or in far north Queensland, hopefully enjoying Arsenal's victory over Aston Villa to give our friends at Spurs a timely boost in their quest for Champions League football.
You're always doing favours for your good mates. Aren't you, Derek? Enjoy your little break, mate. Enjoy the sun. I hope you get it, Derek. Willem, thank you, mate.
Thank you, Rob. Derek, enjoy a strawberry daiquiri on the beach like the hardest geezer, the man who's just run the length of Africa for charity in the UK, and that's what he wanted to celebrate with. So I think you're entitled to one as well.
And to our good mate, Adam Maloney, still wearing his Arsenal hoodie. Thank you for...
That's 3 days, Adam.
I know. It's starting to get it smelly as he's double checks for a sense check. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you. It's been another great show. Please subscribe to Box Stoppage Time and Offside, wherever you get your podcast. Tweet us at BoxToBoxNTS and follow us on X, like us on Facebook if you haven't already, and make sure you join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the world game.